What's going on, everybody? Cody Pasby, Doug Caskey, Mojo Break here at The Mint Collective. Starting things off today, we talk about a lot. I think we say the OGs of the industry, real guys who have been around. No, have been around the block or two,
ouch.
But I think I say this with nothing but reverence to Dr. James Beckett, who's sitting across from us, who's going to share some time with us, share some knowledge about the industry, and talk about an exciting new venture here in the
very
industry,
exciting.
Here at The Mint Collective. Dr. Beckett, thanks so much for joining
us. Thanks, guys. Been looking forward to this.
It's a very exciting time. We talked a little bit about it off air here, but the Mint Collective, a brand new venture here. Just general thoughts on the show so far. What do you expect from this weekend?
What's the commercial? The future belongs to the bold or something?
Yeah.
This is a bold move.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it's been taken. And I think it's a learning experience.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's financially successful for the organizers this year, but boy, they sure have drawn a crowd.
They have, and it's like we were talking about yesterday. Is it a marketing, or is it a event, or is it a card show? I think it's kind of both, but finding where its niches, right, is where we're looking for.
It's a marketing event.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of feels a little bit more like that.
It's not going to be equal to, well, it's going to be different. It
right.
could be better in some respects, but nobody's coming here to, except for meeting people as well as maybe buying some big cards.
Sure.
But the small cards, I don't think it's worth bringing those here. That's
right.
Not what people are looking for.
Because I think there was, you know, we've been sort of talking about this for a couple
minute.
Weeks.
There are no small cards.
No, they're all the same size.
All cards.
Yeah, maybe tobacco cards. There might be a few of them out there. But.
No, I'm just saying, it's like there's no small people. I mean, everybody here, you don't know when you walk up to somebody here whether a big hitter or a singles hitter.
Right.
You know, I just don't know. So I just enjoy. But everybody here is passionate. And it's a little bit of a premium ticket. And so, you know, that winnowed out people that are just curious into people that really are interested in going further in our industry.
For sure. Is there anything on the floor that you've seen that you've liked out there?
No.
Not yet?
No. My former company, my old company, has got some new initiatives they're announcing. That's pretty exciting. But everybody has. I think people have seen this with the postponement from a couple months ago.
Sure.
It's allowed people to really get a running start and announce some things to a strong group of influencers.
Sure.
All over the floor here.
No doubt. Now, did you ever imagine, you know, let's rewind 10, 15, 20 years. I mean, I guess even like 7 years. Did you think that this industry would be where it's at today?
No. 3 years ago, it didn't look
right.
like that. But on the other hand, it's there was a smaller version of this in the Hawaii trade shows back in the early 90s,
sure.
let's say, before the junk wax kind of took over. The National has had some great moments.
Mm-hmm.
But this is very different. This is very different. It's not like a card show, and it's not like the National, and it's a little bit more like the Hawaii trade show.
Sure. Shout out to Kit Young. I'm trying to rent his place, trying to convince the wife to go out there, and I need to sell a few cards to get out
you
there.
Need to
you
sell
know,
some big cards.
Yes,
those would be big cards.
Absolutely. Yeah. Baby Beach is one of my favorite places in Maui, so I love
Kahunas,
the location.
I think we'd call them in Hawaii.
Big Kahuna.
Yeah. Absolutely. Lahaina right there, but
that's OG.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that is an OG for sure. And I'm glad I got a chance to go to Hawaii. I know it wasn't probably what it used to be, but we got to go to Hawaii, and I think it was 2016.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and it was nice to see how it used to be and how, you know, not quite exactly the way it used to be, but, you know, how it was.
That was so much fun, but that also probably was not financially viable
right.
for the organizers.
Right.
But it was a contribution to our industry. It got people that probably wouldn't have otherwise been there. Same as this.
Right.
It's getting people that are thinking, you know, I haven't really gone to that many card shows. This one I'm going to make.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I can't convince my wife to come to most card shows, but Hawaii, we'll go.
Pretty easy. Yeah. That's an easy sell.
Doesn't take much.
Yeah.
So
we're talking about so much change in this industry. And this, obviously, it really stems from the beginning of 2020. There's just been such an influx of new interest. Here we are just about 2 years into that boom. Where do you think we're going maybe 5 years down the road? Is this sustainable where we're at right now? Obviously, we're talking about new shows, new crowds. Where do you see this industry, and I guess now a combination of, you know, you're adding the digital world, NFTs, I guess, are now in that conversation. Where are we? Is this sustainable, just to put it shortly?
Well, there's a lot of people in this room that are making, they're believing that it's going to be a lot bigger.
Yeah.
But there's only one of them that's made a $25 billion bet.
Sure.
And that's Fanatics.
Yeah.
And they're right behind me here.
Mm-hmm.
That this is for real, and it has to at least double over that time. At least double. I think it needs to double in the next 3 years. And I think they're moving toward that. And again, this is a marketing event. All the key marketers are here. They're using all the tools of the 21st century to take this to the next level. We didn't have that in the 20th century.
Yeah.
It was snail mail and print publications and
sure.
things like that.
But yeah.
Cards don't even have to be physical anymore.
Right. That's
although
insane.
I'm not an NFT guy, I applaud those who are trying new things and seeing if it'll stick.
Innovating. Now, with Fanatics in the fold, who do you think it affects the most between card shops, breakers, and distributors, the supply chain as it is right now?
Anybody that has customer intimacy, I think, is safe. Anybody yeah. that has a close connection with the customers. That's why distributors could be disintermediated. That's
right.
That's or the rules could be changed.
Sure.
LCS has the customer there. I think they have some value. What was the third one?
Breakers.
Breakers. Some breakers are transactional, and some are community-based.
Sure.
They have a real following.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't see why Fanatics or anybody would want to disturb that. That's an ecosystem that's really working. It's win-win.
Yeah.
It's win-win for them. They transact the product, and then it comes into the... It comes into the way collectors want to receive
sure.
it. So you don't need to rock that boat.
Now, do you...
But distributors are going to need to be making sure they're adding value. And then they're secure. Retail distributors, I think, have... that's a tricky business, but is it any trickier than dealing with card shops?
Sure, exactly.
So I'm hoping it's status quo with some improvements, some tweaks, but not so disruptive that...
Right, right. Now, you know, we mentioned breakers. Do you think there's anything that Fanatics can do to kind of, you know, manage the breaking community? Because, I mean, we have a lot of, like, you know, we've been doing it for 10 years, but we have some guys that, you know, you've probably heard that aren't doing it on the up and up. Is there anything that you think the manufacturer can do to kind of build more customer confidence for people joining breaks?
There's been some initiatives toward that, and... Again, in America, you're innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
That's a little bit of a problem.
yeah, no doubt.
You can run up a pretty good tab before mm-hmm. you say, oh, sorry, don't. So I don't think Fanatics is necessarily in a pickle.
Mm-hmm.
But if they take a fresh look at this, all breakers are not equal.
Sure.
I obviously, by reputation and by personality, I think the past matters.
Yeah.
And so I think people with good history, long track records, and I wish that the customers would see that too.
Yeah.
That would be very beneficial to you guys, but you've earned it.
Yeah.
And so to go to the latest breaker that just popped up, again, if it's even if they can't get product from Panini, they can get product. And they can hang out their shingle and say, we're here and we've got some... better whistles or perks or something, but ultimately, if it's, I think integrity has to be earned.
Yeah.
Maybe that's my old school approach.
Well, what do you think about a company that, you know, maybe pulls like a Trevor Lawrence gold card, doesn't necessarily handle that situation correctly, but has a lot of followers? Do you think somebody like Fanatics looks at that and says, you know, stuff that's happened in their past doesn't matter because they're following? Or, you know, does that kind of stuff, you know, cancel them out in the whole grand scheme of things? You know, I'm using that as an example because that's what's fresh on my mind. But, you know, is following, like, mistakes, are you out? Or is it following supersedes everything, you think, when it comes to...
You get extra grace if you get a large following, yeah. Let's put it that way.
Sure.
It's probably three strikes and you're out, not one strike.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, for sure.
Yeah. So, again... Everybody wants breakers to be on the up and up, be successful, and increase the energy, enthusiasm in the category. And a big card, you know, then it's you forget. You know?
Yeah,
it's a what have you done lately too.
Absolutely, and we always try to preach transparency with our customers, and I hope with Fanatics and we adopt more of a transparency in the segment of breaking because. You know, technology's gotten so good now, guys on their phones can jump in and, you know, and pull a $10,000 card, and that might be life-changing to them, and then they take that away from somebody who paid for a box, right? So, you know, you hope some systems bit in place, and because a lot of people are coming in, and there are a lot, some people might be getting burned, and they're not staying long-term because they were mistreated, right? So
well,
it kind of stunts the growth.
Had throughout the past, there's always been conspiracy theories.
Right, right.
I've been the focus of some of those over the years, and I would say they're generally not true. They're absolutely not true.
I'm sure you were probably the original pump and dump on price guides, right? Like, he must have 150 Chipper Jones rookie cards.
Way more sophisticated than that.
Yeah, of course.
No, but you can't disprove that you didn't do something sometimes.
Sure.
Other than the track record of just being, like, say, transparent and people can see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing that's good in America is that people can't keep a secret.
Sure.
Very easy.
Yeah, that's
so
a good point.
If somebody's doing something wrong, there's somebody, hopefully is going to be a whistleblower. And I just think the bad guys need to be weeded out.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to be innocent until proven guilty. But there's too much money at stake.
There is.
On the other hand, the breaker thing is interesting, that you can create this mystique that your breaks are better because you are a celebrity or you have some connection that gets you somehow a better product.
Sure. Yeah. I mean,
more loaded. Hotter.
Yeah, I've definitely heard the taglines of home of the one of one. Or
I mean, but who would want to shoot that down?
Right.
I mean, of the person. On the other hand, it's bad for the whole industry. There's a perception that if it was a celebrity break, there would be some, you know, some boost to it.
Right. Sure.
And I don't think that's happening.
No.
But that'll always be suggested.
Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, with this flawless situation with the triple logo, man, I think everybody thought it was coming out with the 5 cases that, you know, said celebrity was in. And then the 25 cases that were done the other night, everybody was convinced it was coming out then. So, and it's in the last palette that Panini made, right? So those are the conspiracy talks amongst the industry of, you know, sell more flawless, watch the price go up. We're going to put that triple logo man in the last case.
Well, it requires, what is last? Is
right.
it the one on the bottom? Was it the one that got
sure.
set aside? It could be any of those things. But
exactly.
In this full transparency. It's not even transparency. It's the data is so prized now.
Yeah.
And instead of being a private hobby where you're looking to, if I get this card, I'm going to put it away, you're telling the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a big card is discovered, you're bragging about it.
Yeah.
Okay. But if somebody had already discovered it, put it away, and not said anything,
right?
It's like the Napoleon Lajoie from 1933.
Yeah.
Didn't come out until 34. Those
right.
little kids, my dad included, you know, we're going after that last card in the set.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, I do want to shift to we're talking about the cards now. Talk a little bit about baseball cards. Baseball season's coming up, and I feel like when people think of the Beckett media, you know, the Beckett guide, like, baseball comes up for me first and foremost. So first of all, I do want to congratulate you. Named the Jefferson Burdick Award winner. That's the Sabre Conference. So congratulations on that. And just kind of going into baseball season, any modern cards that you're looking at, or maybe some vintage stuff that's catching your eye right now on the market?
I love all cards.
Yes,
like I said, but
of course. That's why we're here.
I'm not. I'm probably not in the acquisition mode that much. I've got enough cards. I have too many to display the ones I want to display. So, but baseball was my first love.
Yeah.
And Sabre, that's a nice award because it's baseball. And
I
had a fork in the road back 50 years ago to get my, almost 50 years ago when Sabre was getting started, to get more involved in that way, because I've always been a data analytic guy.
Mm-hmm.
Or to get more involved in the cards, and I'm glad I chose cards, and that'll be fun. But baseball is what drove this industry.
Yes.
And it's amazing how the prospecting doesn't make sense until somebody hits big.
Sure.
And then you go, wait a minute.
Right. So.
But you can't know. Even the most knowledgeable baseball minor league and young player guys that dig really deep. And Ben Eklar, shout out to him. You know, he was one of our top guys at that.
Yeah.
One of the reasons we hired him. But he studied that for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And could do other things, but you could spend all your time. And, you know, general managers and scouts and farm directors,
right.
They're doing all that stuff. And yet baseball cards has a different metric.
Sure.
You know, that's what team you're on matters more than you know, the raw talent, the age, the
likability,
likability, all that. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. It's almost like they're worth more when they're prospects. Right. To the when they get called up. Very few exceed their prospect pricing. Now, it's probably hard for you to just pick one, but is there any cards that in your PC that are like your favorite that you think of when I ask you, you know, what sticks out?
Roberto Clemente was my favorite guy as a kid. And I've limited it, Doug, to my top 1,000.
Oh, okay.
On my wall, and I'm kind of gradually showing some segments of my wall in my virtual background and doing a few YouTube videos to show that. And it's A to Z, all sports. So I'll do the A's, Hank Aaron to whatever, and somebody will write in and say, they don't say, hey, that's a great Hank Aaron card. They say, tell me more about that Andre the Giant.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He's A also.
Right. That's been an incredible thing to see, I think. It just kind of roaming the show floor last night was the amount of sort of for alternative cards, alternative sports. I'm seeing music and entertainment,
that
I think, more
super
than ever.
That is wonderful.
Mm. I know. It's awesome. I've gotten into the Dutch gum cards myself. I bought a Jimi Hendrix, and now I'm out there looking for the Who and, you know, the Beatles and PSA form. So I think that's awesome. Now, I'm probably going to butcher how you said this, but you had a really good point. I believe it was about last year. You were talking about the short tail, how you have the expensive cards, and then you have the you know, the base cards that kind of follow along. Now, I think we've seen some drop-off with overproduction. Do you think that that's going to continue and it's just going to push into the high-dollar cards, or do you think the short tail catches back up?
Well, there's, now that you mentioned, there's kind of a long tail, short tail kind of thing for demand.
Yeah.
But a long tail, short tail thing for supply.
Yeah.
And so, you know, high supply, high demand sounds good, as long as the demand is there. But if that demand-supply equilibrium gets disturbed, you're holding a pretty plentiful card, and that's what's happened. And, you know,
you can't just go by the
it's the current pop report.
Sure.
It's the current demand. But if you're waiting, well, there's, I don't know if there's still 6 million cards in the PSA, you know, backlog.
Right.
But if there's only 5 million or 4 million,
sure,
you know, there are a bunch of them are those kind of cards.
Yeah, because I almost feel like a lot of people jumped in, you know, around the, we call it the pandy, because we don't want to be blocked on YouTube by saying the actual word. But I feel like people gravitated towards those cards and gave those a, you know, because they're like, I need to get a Zion, or I need to get a, you know, a Jaw, and they're just buying base cards. And I think that propped it up, but I think people realize these cards aren't really worth anything. They're going down, you know, and I think that's why we've seen like LaMelo Ball's base cards sell for $10-$15 now, right, as opposed to Zion selling for $200-$300 at the time.
Right. Well, it's going up or going down is relative. It's relative to where they were.
Yeah.
And if it starts up too high, then it's going to go down. We had lots of heat for that in our price guides back in the day. If something started out really high on optimism and mm-hmm. speculation, and then it would drop the next month, when the guy really hadn't done anything, he hadn't done anything bad, but he hadn't done anything great either.
Right,
so he hadn't fulfilled his promise.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, without having eBay data, that how did you guys pull in that data? Was it just going to card shows
well,
to
we
see?
We had 18 analysts at one point.
Wow.
So everybody was going somewhere at least once a month, and we'd have one guy every weekend. We'd have somebody on the East Coast, somebody on the West Coast, somebody in the Midwest or Canada, whatever.
Wow.
And, you know, so we were on, you know, on the phone. Kids, do you know what a phone is?
Yeah, right.
It's used just for talk. So we would call long distance.
Sure, you know, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We'd pay extra for that. So we called the card shops, and we got a lot of surveys from individuals. So it's putting it all together and kind of like what Card Letter tries to do. The key is kind of vetting the data.
Right.
And giving what emphasis or deleting some things that are either not honest or not indicative of the true market.
Right, because, I mean, now you almost see somebody that necessarily isn't performing at the sports level but is liked and collected. Right. So, I mean, I couldn't imagine trying to do that then. It's like, you know, this guy,
well, the card,
you know, Ben McDonald is well liked, but he's a bust, you know.
Well, the card performance, I mean, it trumps the
it does,
the thought that, gee, this guy ought to be worth more.
Right.
Well, and that stuck in my craw when I'm thinking, gee, this is what this card is selling for this past month. This is what we have to put down. Yeah, but, you know, and the guys would say, yeah, but it's, I said, well, it'll go up the following month if there's that percent. But the last month or the data that we have does not say that this card is at that level yet.
Yeah.
And the smart dealers and collectors were, so the dynamic element is good. So there always has to be this thought that there's cards over here, there's cards over there. If these cards that I really like are, if I get a little queasy about spending that money, there's lots of other alternatives. That's why this music and other kinds of things, it blows off steam of, you know, of getting too overheated in baseball.
Sure.
Because if baseball is perceived as overheated, you go to football or basketball or hockey, mm-hmm. or one of these others that are, they're not undiscovered. They're just not in the mainstream. Dealers typically want to sell what they have.
Sure. Yeah. They don't want to take chances.
No, it's hard to offer for sale those cards you do not have.
Absolutely.
What I would sell it for if I had it. Now, that's academic.
Right.
But I have this card right here. So, you know, the typical dealer does not have the most expensive Luka rookie, but they have some base rookies.
Sure.
And they may not even be 10s or 9.5s, but they're going to offer you what they have, and you're going to have a chance to get a really good card.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the best of that version,
you know,
not the best of the rainbow. It's maybe not the top condition. Even if it is the top condition, it's pretty plentiful. And the pop reports are showing that. So all this stuff that Ryan Stasinski's doing with the gem rate,
mm-hmm.
all this stuff is positive.
Yeah.
It's making for a more knowledgeable collector that can enjoy.
Yeah,
and,
I mean,
and the fact that it doesn't make sense sometimes is because it's baseball cards.
Right. Yeah.
And this is not an efficient market.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot harder navigating now. I remember in 91, we collected Stadium Club very heavy, and Frank Thomas was a, you know, big rookie, and you know, going to the, I think it was like $60 in Beckett at the time, and the shop would give you 30. So it was very simple to be like, okay, I got two, I can take it and get $60 and get another box or a pack or whatever. Now it's like comps there, comps here, you know, and there's a lot of more disagreements. So, I mean, it is hard to pull in that data when you have so many different outlets to sell. But yeah, I remember this. The book almost made it easier when you're going in and trying to sell.
Well, the price
you know
guide was a different dilemma. You know, us doing a price guide, even though a lot of the guys that we had been veterans of buying and selling and trading, mm-hmm. and had worked in card shops, that was always great. A bunch of our guys had done that. But the price guide is different. It's not what you think it's worth. It's what it's sold for.
Sure.
And that, again, it's stuck in our craw that these things don't make sense, but it's what it was. Right. And you've got to think that the supply and demand and other kinds of collector interest gradually will move toward sensibility.
Yeah. Did you ever think in your wildest imagination that we would see these golden auction sales for, like, you know, $500,000 cards, you know, $3 million LeBron rookies? I mean, it's the triple logo, man, they're saying is easily a $4 million card. I mean,
again, there's price guide and there's what something sold for. There's comps.
Yeah.
But what people need to be thinking about is, when the next one comes up, what do I think?
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be that the comp was this, therefore I must pay more.
Mm-hmm.
It might be that's interesting, but you're comparing to anything and everything.
Yeah.
And you're comparing to buying a small island.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. Sometimes two or three islands in these prices. Lastly, what do you think about, you know, like Drake and these influencers getting in the hobby? Do you think it's good or it's bad?
How could it be bad?
I know, right? I guess, you know.
How could it possibly be bad? Even if he said, hey, I've been looking at, don't buy baseball cards or any other kind of card.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you why.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't want to say it's making sports cards cool, but I guess that's a lack of a better word. It's, you know, we have our niche, and, you know, and you've obviously been in here longer than us, but, you know, from 2011, there was very few people that knew what I did and I could explain what I did.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh, yeah, you, yeah, I know what you do now, you know? So it's almost like it's making people more aware and making it cool.
Josh Luber had it right. It's making cards cool again.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
It really
yes.
was cool
yep.
back in the day. Now, it wasn't cool for the 30-somethings and 40-somethings
sure,
necessarily.
Yeah.
It was for the 12-year-olds.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me show you my album or something. But all that is positive. All that is positive.
Yeah.
And it has to happen. If Fanatics is going to double or triple this industry or quintuple, I mean, they really have lofty goals. It's got to have more people. Otherwise, we're chasing our tails. You know, we got the mm-hmm. same people churning the same cards. So they want to print more cards.
Mm-hmm.
They can't do that unless there's a lot more. There's got to be more money and more collectors. The junk wax era was caused by There wasn't a drop-off in money. There was a drop-off in collectors.
Sure,
and
yeah.
So when the collectors dropped off, they raised the prices. And then when they're raising the prices, then more people dropped off. And then they raised the prices more so they could make their guarantees.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look up and think, we don't have any kids anymore. And, you know. So now it's been built back up.
Yeah. We had too much of a supply issue there, right?
Yeah.
I watched my stadium club set that we built, you know, pack by pack, go from 300 to 50 in a couple of years. And that was like, okay, I'm on to playing video games and getting in, playing, doing something else, right? And then 2009, jumped back in when I knew that there's patch cards and autographs. Yeah.
Not that I need sympathy, but just think of our guys. You know, when that was happening, we're seeing it happen. Everybody on our team was just passionate about the hobby, and many of them are still in the hobby.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just painful to see that,
mm-hmm.
and yet it's what was happening. And unless you accurately, it's like you're talking about integrity and transparency. Unless you show that accurately, you've got to, like the old stamp catalogs, that you're going to pay between 15% and 17% or
right.
something.
Yeah.
Needed to be more accurate, and it's hard to track it. And when the down arrows came, those were not happy days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think you mentioned it that this hobby, this is nothing but good news with newer, you know, big names and big faces coming in. You just roam around the show floor and you see it, like new faces, old faces, all coming together to love this hobby and to build it up. And I think you said it, that it's in as good a place, I think, as it's been in a long, long time.
Well, this won't be the only hobby that gets scammed as it gets up. And
sure.
There have been increased mm-hmm. numbers of scams when you have
yeah.
more people coming in.
Unfortunately.
But if they're publicly dealt with, and every problem could be an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, when there's fake slabs, the card graders figure out we need to add some more anti-counterfeit protection measures.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And again, if that's publicized, that okay, well, yeah, they're doing something about it. They're not being victims.
Mm-hmm.
They're triumphing over this. You've pointed out a flaw in the system. You know, Ryan Nolan's spotting fakes. That ought to empower
yes.
people to
yes,
say,
that's great.
Hey, wait a minute, there's fakes?
Yeah.
Well, of course there's fakes because
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of money here. But
yeah, exactly.
The good guys are going to beat the bad guys.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, 100% in the long run.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank
short
you.
Run, the bad guys are going to, but they've yeah. got to be punished. Again, innocent until proven guilty. But if they're guilty, they can't just say, oh, okay, let me make restitution and then walk away. Now, there needs to be some deterrent.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
absolutely. Well, Dr. Beckett, thank
I'm
you
not,
so much. Yeah.
I'm not going to, if nominated, will not serve on the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Because my...
Yeah, we won't get you in front of the Senate here.
My,
yeah.
My stance on sentencing guidelines would be suspect.
Yeah, yeah.
I would be in favor of the death penalty. That's actually a joke.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of
some
guys...
Some bad guys need to be banned. It's impossible
yes.
to ban them in this hobby because you come back with a different name.
True,
for a
right.
different...
And, you know, the old adage, bad press is good, you know? Any press is good press. You
and
know,
the attention
you know,
span that we have is just short, right? I mean, it could be, I've seen guys scam and be back like in a week, you know? It's like, I know there's guys that have been like years, but, you know,
yeah.
it's like you're out and then you're like, okay, I'll crawl back in. Nobody remembers what I did, you know, a year ago,
yeah.
so.
But the public can gradually figure out who the good guys are.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the good guys, there are some good guys that started yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't want to paint them with the wrong brush, but people that have stood the test of time,
yeah.
you know, they've got a track record.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Dr. Beck, thank you so
Thanks,
much
guys.
For joining us. Really appreciate
Enjoyed
your time.
Enjoyed it.
I think we need to do a Hobbies People's Court. We can have the theme song
yeah.
and everything, you
Let's
know.
Do it.
So.
Judge Jimmy.
Yeah, exactly. That would be a lot of fun. This has been fun.
No,
this is a great conversation.
I'd be too draconian.
Yeah.